This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
For those of you who jumped on the call during the practice, hi, my name is Noah Pomeroy. I'm a mindfulness consultant based here in Honolulu, Hawaii, coming from Manoa Valley this afternoon. And it's an honor to be stepping in for Diana to practice with you all today, share some thoughts. I'm here on Oahu and remotely. I share workshops, training, courses, retreats with organizational groups, with government nonprofits. I teach a course at the University of Hawaii down the street, a 4-credit mindfulness course. Yeah, and I love to share about this stuff. It's so relevant. I saw one share in the chat. Somebody noticed some peace. That's nice. It's nice when that happens. So today, I want to share about a topic that is pretty close to my heart. This is going to be a little different than a mindful leadership presentation that I might give in a corporate boardroom or an academic lecture at a university. Let's see, I got a heads up that my volume is low. Let's see, for those of you on screen, can you give me a thumbs up if you can hear me okay? All right. Well, for the, yeah, it might have been maybe a speaker issue for the volume low notice. Thanks. So I want to share about love in the time of meltdowns. Can I get a physical or virtual thumbs up if you can see my screen? Got a PowerPoint here for you folks, just so it keeps me on the rails because I could get off on tangents. I'm gonna keep an eye on the time. I also wanna express my gratitude to Serena Honig from UCLA Mindful, who is here helping run the show. So thank you, Serena. So you might interpret this title in different ways right now, but my intention is this is sharing from the experience of a meltdown from a baby. So these are relational mindfulness lessons from my baby that I'd like to share and invite you to consider if there's something here that you might take with you to apply mindfulness in your relationships. So my son's name is River, and he's 9 months old, just about. And when he first opened his eyes and looked at me, gave me this admonition without saying anything: "You better keep me alive. Like, you, this is on you." Okay, my mom can help too. But this was the first lesson, is that relationships matter. And I've just, that feeling of having a small, helpless creature entirely dependent on me was like, wow, this is the first experience we all have with relationships mattering. It's this first fundamental like experience of being a helpless being and being 100% dependent on relationships to survive and get through the world, to get to adulthood, when we have it all figured out finally, right? And of course, relationships don't just matter when we're babies or growing up or, finally becoming adults or finally becoming retired. And they matter our entire lives. And, each of us knows this. We also have science, pretty strong science that tells us how important relationships are. There's this Harvard study of adult development, which I'm sure many of you have heard of or are familiar with. So it's a extremely long-running study that followed multiple generations over 80 years, tracking individuals, their families, asking thousands of questions, taking hundreds of measurements from brain scans to blood work. Trying to ask this question of what makes a good life. And the one thing that emerged from the data is that good relationships keep us happier and healthier. As Robert Waldinger, one of the chief scientists on this study, says here. So then, since they matter so much, shouldn't we consider this tool set of mindfulness in nurturing relationships in our lives of all kinds, from our closest relationships to strangers to maybe our communities to folks beyond on the internet or not on the internet? I like to think of mindful relating is being based on these four pillars, where we can kind of build up these four different pillars in our relational mindfulness capacities: internal awareness, external awareness, equanimity, empathy. But I will take a moment to define this concept of relational mindfulness for you, which some of you have probably, if you've been in these UCLA Mindful discussions or participated in the previous iteration of the Mindful Awareness Research Center, you've probably heard about relational mindfulness. But I'll go ahead and share this quote from the literature from Falb and Pargament, 2012, from the Asian Journal of Psychiatry. The emerging concept of relational mindfulness focuses attention on the oft-neglected interpersonal aspects of mindfulness practice. Relational mindfulness is potentially relevant to the psychotherapeutic process due to its cultivation of the types of qualities that enhance the therapeutic relationship, including warmth, empathy, curiosity, acceptance, self-attunement, and emotional intelligence. In addition, mindfulness practices, especially relational ones, can contribute to the development of spiritual qualities such as transcendence, boundlessness, ultimacy, and interconnectedness. So this is rich terrain. Maybe some of you have even had the pleasure of being in a hot seat practice guided by Marv Belzer, who I know I trained with and has led some of these, but that's a great group relational mindfulness activity. So let's go through these and take a look at these different pillars. So internal awareness. So love in the time of meltdowns. So my wife and I are in the car, our son River's in the back in the car seat. We just left a party for a friend's young child, and River starts to cry. So commencement of the meltdown, and practicing this pillar of relational mindfulness. What could I do in that situation? I can notice the thoughts and the feelings and the body sensations arising now. I think everyone's probably heard a baby cry. It's this exquisitely tuned sound, over millions of years, to just get your attention And it's meant to be annoying and to make you want to do something to stop it. So I noticed that, but I also noticed the helplessness of driving the car. So I feel tension. I notice my thoughts. I want this to stop. Why is my baby crying? I didn't think my baby cried that much. What body sensations, that again, that tension. Okay, I'm noticing this. Can I notice it with mindfulness, with curiosity, with openness? Curiosity is this mindfulness power move that we bring in all these different contexts. And how about equanimity? So I know many of you are probably familiar with this term. If you're not, it means an even-minded receptivity to experience, kind of regardless of if we're talking about something that's in the pleasant realm or the unpleasant realm. So it's not indifference. It has a lot more potential than indifference. So meltdown is happening. Can I get curious about that tension in my body, about like the grating? Why is this, what is it that's so grating about this sound? What is he actually feeling? Can I see if there's any space, since I'm stuck in this car with the meltdown happening, can I see if there's, is there any space for me to just be okay and kind of be with this unfolding situation? And in this particular case, when I notice, like, I'm confronted with a lack of control, and that kind of brings a certain ease. All right, okay. Equanimity. And how about external awareness? So this is another pillar in our relating that we can bring to bear. Now, this is, in in-person social interactions, these pillars are more obviously applied, but they can apply in other contexts as well. So of course, I noticed in this context of the meltdown, I noticed the crying, of course. And when I activate the curiosity about the crying, I notice it's got this, it's like so well orchestrated, and like the fact that it's kind of impressive that my baby, he's not talking, he's babbling, but he can make this sound that's so commanding, and the way it rises, and the rhythm to it, the recharge when they're like catching their breath. And sometimes they like, stumble a few times trying to catch their breath, and you're like, ooh, oh, is it over? But no, starts up again. And then, with each other, we can notice our cues, body language, eye contact, the context of the social situation we're in. So maybe there's something more than just this single person. External awareness and empathy. So this is a big one. Enhancing our ability to take perspective, maybe even having compassion. In this case, I know my son is quite distraught. I don't know exactly why. There's this, if you had the spectrum of pleasant and then you got the zero and you get the unpleasant, or let's just call it even unsatisfactory, or the whole realm of dukkha, if you want to bring some Buddhist language into it, like he's a cry, can mean anything on that spectrum. So I don't know. I mean, it could be it just doesn't like the way the car seat feels. Doesn't have the right toy, or that cry isn't too far off from like, I'm wounded, I need help. So practicing empathy, it's critical, kind of critical relational skill. I want to share a quote from S.J. Scott, author of Mindful Relationship Habits. Self-absorption in all forms kills empathy. let alone compassion. When we focus on ourselves, our world contracts and our problems and preoccupations loom large. But when we focus on others, our world expands. Our own problems drift to the periphery of the mind and so seem smaller. And we increase our capacity for connection or compassionate action. I really like this theme of expansion, of how this isn't like just something we're practicing to like get more from our relationships, to like have more in some greedy sense. If you're like, it feels good to feel expanded and connected with others. There's a lot of potential here. So we can apply these principles in any kind of relationship to both pleasant and unpleasant interactions. And I want to clarify that there are both what's called formal and informal relational mindfulness practices. So formal practice might be a mindful dyad or triad that you find yourself in, where you're specifically practicing some like speaking and listening skills kind of in a protected framework of an exercise, which I will say that we're going to present the option for all of you here today to try later. And I will say it's an option. We're going to give you a chance to choose whether you would like to participate in a breakout room to practice some of these activities, or if you'd prefer to stay in the main room and do a journaling exercise here in a few minutes. So you can consider what you're up for, and then we will launch a poll when we get to that point to ask you your preference. And I want to highlight that, you know, I gave this example of the meltdown, which is, you know, you could arguably put that, pretty safely put that in the unpleasant realm of experience, but I'd be doing a disservice to River if I also didn't share how this applies to something in the pleasant realm. And what I've discovered is that the sound of River giggling and laughing is one of the most amazing and powerful things that I've ever heard. And I figured out a way to like fairly reliably trigger this. I can like nuzzle my forehead into his chest, and he just lets out this giggle that and just starts giggling, and it has this soft smile on his face and looks at me like everything is fine. Like I'm like, he's so okay and content. I could see that in the external awareness piece, like the sound of his giggle, the look on his face. Internally, I feel this, you know, cascade of oxytocin or what other, you know, whatever other like hacked endorphins are being released in my system from this moment of connection with my son. The empathy piece is there. You know, that one's pretty easy when you're feeling good and at peace. And then the equanimity piece is interesting too, because, you know, what do we want to do to pleasant experience and pleasure, right? We want to hold on to it, keep it, so we got it, so it lasts. And maybe in this context, I think mindfulness can help us kind of, I forget who said it in a poem, but kissing the bird of joy as it flies. Like we know that the joyful, pleasant experience also arises and passes away, just like the difficult one. Yeah. So I want to, you know, roll this right into this concept I really love of relational mindfulness snacks, or as the researcher Barbara Fredrickson calls Love 2.0. She released it a book about this some time ago. Now, she calls it Love 2.0 because this is not reserved for very close. It's not reserved for romantic partner relationships or family relationships, but that her main thesis is that there's this whole ocean of relational, of love out there that comes from small moments of interaction. Now, these can occur with our closest relationships in our lives, but they can also occur with strangers, and just in passing in the street or on a random, Wednesday afternoon breakout room at the UCLA Mindful Sit. You never know when they're going to happen. What she points out is that there's these shared moments of positivity, resonance, of some kind of joy, some kind of synchrony, mutual care. I think that the science is pretty clear that even just acknowledging someone when you're like passing them in the street or some context like that, that lifts people up. So this can be a bit of a gain. You're like, where can I snack on some relational mindfulness, a little Love 2.0 in my life? And there's a deeper framework here that Barbara has shared called this broaden and build mode that suggests that this, the more we have and cultivate these moments, it actually enhances our, not only our mental, but our physiological health and builds resilience in some really powerful ways. Even making us more creative, wise, and feeling connected. So a lot of rich potential here. How to bring mindfulness into your relationships. So, just practicing solo here, like we did in the beginning. I mean, solo together. This helps cultivate these capacities. When you're in there, maybe following your breath or experiencing some lightness of open awareness, or the heaviness of, or the intractability of perusing some a sticky buffet of your neuroses. That actually, like, all that stuff pays off in the relational realm too, because you're traversing this like shared human terrain of emotional experience. Yeah, and you can use relating as a practice in your life. So you're like, hey, this is an opportunity to practice like mindfulness, informally. In new parent life, I've found I have less time to sit. I have less opportunities to sit for 30 minutes straight, and more informal practices of like, yeah, okay, I'm doing the dishes and making breakfast for tomorrow. And, can I bring some mindfulness to this? Then there's, of course, in the moment practices where we can pause and breathe, reduce reactivity, and build equanimity, and we can listen. Yeah, in summary, there's a lot we can do in our relationships with these capacities we're developing in mindfulness practice. So with that food for thought, wanna invite everyone to think about which activity for the next 10 minutes you'd like to participate in before we have a little Q&A and discussion. Of course, you don't have to do either of these if you don't feel like it, but I'll ask Serena to launch a poll here. Here we go. And your choice here, if you choose a breakout room, you will be invited to a breakout room triad where you will, I'll share the prompt for the breakout room. And Serena's going to share this prompt in the chat, in the breakout room chat. So that is going to be the breakout room prompt for three people. It's going to be thinking of a recent moment of relational connection that was either joyful or difficult or challenging, and reflecting on how might relational mindfulness through these pillars that we've talked about of internal awareness, external awareness, equanimity, and empathy have helped. And the framework for that is going to be, if you do end up in a breakout room, I see we have a few takers. Yeah, we have some people who are down for that. I encourage you, if you do end up in a breakout room, to turn on your camera if you're open to that. So each person will have 2 minutes to share. If you're in a triad, we might end up with a couple of dyads, in which case you'll have 3 minutes to share. And then after that formal sharing, where one person can volunteer to speak first, they share uninterrupted for 2 minutes, and then the next person shares. And there's no real right answers here. Even if you don't have an answer, you can just share what you're experiencing in the moment. And then there will be a few minutes for open dialogue in the breakout rooms for a debrief. And I'll have Serena pass on for those of you that sign up for the breakout rooms to reiterate that guidance. So, yeah, any final votes for breakout room or journaling activity? I'm gonna pull up the main room journaling activity right now. So, for those of you hanging out here for the next 10 minutes, we can go ahead and dive into these. And, Serena, I think we're good to create those breakout rooms now. Looks like we have, yeah, maybe we should do, looks like a couple dyads and a triad. And feel free to drop any questions in the chat, folks.
Okay, I'm all set.
Great. I got a question about journaling prompt. Now, so the journaling prompt here is shared on my screen, which I believe is still being shared. And yeah, the breakout room prompt will be reshared in the breakout rooms.
I've just dropped the journaling prompt into the chat. Sorry for the formatting. It kind of goofed when I pasted. And I will reshare the breakout room prompt as well once we're in there. Just give me the go ahead when Noah.
Yeah, go ahead and create the breakout rooms. It looks like we got 7 breakout room takers, so I'd say let's do a triad and 2 dyads.
Okay, 10 minutes, here we go.
And folks, we're gonna have optional, this is definitely no requirement to share anything you journaled about with these prompts, but just kind of general discussion Q&A after this to close out the session. Welcome back, everyone, from your breakout room experience or your journaling and reflection experience. So we got some time to just chat about any insights, reflections, stuff from the sit, things I shared in the brief talk, your experience in the breakout rooms or the journaling exercise. What came up? Feel free to drop something in the chat if you want to come on and share your voice or your voice and your image. That's of course more than welcome. You can raise a digital or physical hand for that. Oh, saw a hand raised, but looks like it went away. Go ahead and re-raise if you care. Christina, go ahead and share.
I would just like to share that, and this had happened many times in the past, that it's amazing how you get paired with somebody who's got a similar experience.
Thanks for sharing that. Any more on that?
I just found it amazing. It's very, it's a good feeling. Not to be alone. That's all.
Thanks, Christina. Appreciate that. It really speaks to this element of like common humanity. If anyone's ever common humanity is one of these components of self-compassion, which is so important because we often get stuck in these arenas where we think we're just alone in our experience. So to be able to share that with folks is powerful. I notice that I do grocery shopping. I can bring moments of presence when I get to the grocery store. But before I enter to connect with myself, standing in line is also a great time to, practice. Of course, like these days, you might get a weird look if you're like not intent doing something on your phone, like, wait, you want to talk to someone and like connect in the grocery store line. Can I give a shout out to my mom, Lynn, who's here, my amazing mother. I was talking about child, like being a parent. Mom, she's been an amazing parent. I love you, Mom. My sister's here as well. Erica, thanks for joining. Yes, Mom, you can have a copy of my slides. You got it. Anyone else? Anyone else who wants a copy of my slides? Happy to share. Thinking about how to apply these pillars. Learn to pause first. That's true. Like so much of this practice, whether we're practicing with our own experience and mindfulness, pausing before that self-critical thought like runs its course. Pausing before that reaction to find like all the other opportunities to respond to a situation that are there, but that we're just like have these blinders on. So that pause does open up so much possibility, so much agency. Helped me realize how I'm able to put myself in a more loving and accepting space, mindset, physically grounded to be with others. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thanks, Jana, for sharing that. You can also think of it as a gift, a gift that you're giving others because it's becoming more scarce, like, attention and relationships. Go ahead, Manajay. Manjay, if you're there, feel free to share. Or anyone else who has questions.
Can you
Yeah.
hear me now?
I can, yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, my something wrong with my camera. Good to be with you, Noah. It's so nice to be here. Yeah, I had a experience just recently. I was coming back from a retreat and at the airport, had some time and got to speak, talk to some people. And there were these discussions, difficult discussions, right, about what's happening right now in the society and with the administration and laws and policies and people who are being impacted negatively. And so I really found myself being very curious about the explanations or the mindset or the approach, the angle of the people who don't see these things, some of the harm that are being done as real harm or, and just so my sense of really having this sincere desire to want to know what they're thinking, I found it very helpful because then there was that equanimity, both sides. That kind of the other person was also able to just not be defensive, but just actually talk about whatever they're thinking, whatever they're feeling, their rationality. And then I was also able to kind of inject a little seeds of kindness, seeds of seeing pain and suffering, and without trying to attack anybody or anything. It was just very, I mean, I had just come from a retreat, so I was probably easier. But I found it so possible, made it possible that I came from a place of curiosity and sincere wanting to know, being aware of any kind of, there was no reaction inside me. So it made it very civilized and easy to communicate. I think this is probably what we are pointing to be able to facilitate or have some kind of easy ways of talking about difficult things and not being reactive. Again, I was coming from a retreat, so it was nice. Yeah, thank you. Sorry about my video. I don't know why it doesn't want to come on.
Oh, it's all good. Thanks for that beautiful share, Manishay. And for confessing that you cheated, that you went on a retreat and then you were able to do that. But no, we just need to figure out how to scale that. Yeah. But I think your points, touching on your points of that, curiosity again, this like power player and mindfulness. Applied in the relational context, but having it be genuine and then that genuine intention to understand that you've talked about and, holding our strong emotions and judgments and with equanimity and like looking for some of that common humanity and then being able to share in a way that genuinely shares, whatever our like values and standing is without it deteriorating. I think it's such a, yeah,
But
it's an art form.
what I also was able to see and really experience was that this other person was very sincere too. They were sincerely believing in what they were thinking is right and true and principled, and they weren't bad people. They were just really sincere also, and so that was very useful for me to experience.
And had I been judgmental, I couldn't experience their sincerity.
Yeah, that's a great point. And to be able to recognize that sincerity and kind of hold it with humility, I think, yeah. Yeah, I think we need a lot more of that on a very large scale.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, practicing and sharing. Well, I know we're officially at time, everyone. Yeah, no worries if you want to jump off. Wanna share an opportunity if you want to stay in touch. I'll just share a link to my email list and my direct email. If you have any questions about the content, you're interested in the slides, just reach out. The present not perfect newsletter is really far from perfect in its regularity. So just there's a warning, you might get an email someday. I also wanted to share that I'm in discussion with UCLA Mindful about hosting a course called Take Back Your Mind, Mindfulness for Agency and Overwhelming Times. And I've learned from a colleague at the Mindfulness Initiative in the UK, Jamie Bristow. His co-author Rosie Bell authored a paper called Mindfulness for Developing Urgency, I mean Developing Agency in Urgent Times. And it's a really powerful deep dive into the ways that mindfulness can help us cultivate agency through like all these different domains of perceiving, of understanding and acting, and these subdomains. So just want to throw that out there. If that's something you're interested in, I don't know, shoot me an email, let me know. We're kind of playing around with what that format could look like, whether we're talking about a 6 to 8 week, like 1 hour a dive into these different subtopics. And the author, Jamie, might make a synchronous or asynchronous appearance. So I feel like there's a hunger for agency at this time. So just want to throw that out there too. And yeah, express my gratitude to each of you, to Serena for co-hosting today. Thank you, Serena. And why don't we close it out just with a 30-second practice if you're all still here. So just gently closing the eyes, taking a breath, letting it out. Really touching and feeling if there's any sense of like of hope, possibility, that's present in your experience. And yeah, opening up the eyes again. Oh, we got another little practitioner on stage here. Hi there. Speaking of babies, yeah. Serena. Well, I guess you're closer to toddler stage now, huh? Yep. That's happening soon. All right, everyone. Thanks for being here. Hi, Mom, Erica. Love you, beautiful people. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit UCLAhealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.